See, not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being until we ask for them. We have this on the line. Scott Malone from NavySeals.com or .org. I'm not certain which. But Mr. Malone has been observing what's going on for a long time. He's done a fascinating interview recently with Judith Miller, who was with the New York Times until she got into some problems there, but she's out now writing articles. But she tells, well, I'm going to let Mr. Malone tell you what she told him about the fact that she had been told ahead of time that there was going to be an attack on the United States, and we're talking about the 9/11 attack. Scott, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon again.
Good afternoon, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. So why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and then how it was that you happened to have an opportunity to interview Judith Miller, formerly of the New York Times.
Good story. That's what I'm actually writing right now. I currently run NavySeals.com, which is a website for about special forces, counterterrorism, intelligence operations, that sort of thing. I spent 25 years thereabouts. Working primarily with PBS Frontline, a documentary series on very similar subjects. Actually, I'm not a SEAL and don't think I could cut it. In the course of that such investigations, I got to know Judith Miller interviewed me about, 1990, back to an Operation Desert Shield before it became a storm, on the telephone about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, ironically. She went to jail last August and September for 85 days, refusing to divulge her White House source, who turned out to be Scooter Libby, who was subsequently indicted. When she got out of the pokey, I contacted her, and she went up and got to meet her face-to-face for the first time in February and discussed some other intelligence from senior White House sources. That she'd gotten during the weekend, the week of July 2001, and it pertained to an Al-Qaeda, an intercept between two Al-Qaeda members discussing how the U.S. had not reacted or retaliated for their attack on the USS Cole in 2000, a Navy ship in which 17 sailors were killed in Aden, Yemen. The whole White House, and I lived in Washington at the time, was all spun up, as was all of Washington, as of all of the so-called CT world, to use her term, counterterrorism world, fearing an Al-Qaeda, major Al-Qaeda attack possibly on the continental United States during the week of July 4th, 2001. In the course of doing that, she was told by a senior White House source, by this, and as they intercepted this conversation, describing a possible huge attack that would force the United States to retaliate since they didn't after the Cole attack. I came to her, contrary to what you read on the blogs all over the world, because I'd been following the actual intercepts, chasing that on, and all of a sudden she got out of the military, the major general level at the Pentagon intelligence agencies, all the way up to the White House.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Scott Malone. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and he had had an opportunity to interview Judith Miller, who told him that she had been told by somebody in the White House about an NSA intercept. between two Al-Qaeda operatives saying, talking about how, you know, they were planning on a major attack that would force the United States to respond. And of course, this was, they did not responded adequately after the coal. And so the story was that they were talking about there was going to be a major attack, probably here in the United States. And everybody thought the attack was going to occur on the 4th of July. Was this a notification to Judith before or after the 4th of July of 2001?
Excellent question. No, it's not clear. The last formal interview I did with her was on April 27th, which is on camera. She did not specify precisely when. It was during the week of, because 4th of July falls on a Wednesday. And basically, all the people, her contacts in the counterintelligence, counterterrorism world, were going to be not allowed to go away for a holiday.
So everybody, we know now that everybody certainly was actually expecting this attack on the 4th of July that time. And for our listeners out there in the listening audience, our guest this afternoon is Scott Malone, and he is with an organization that you'll find on the internet called NavySeals.com. And he's spent many, many years working with television, doing television productions, and certainly often working with special forces. But now, of course, he has put together some very important information. And part of this is based upon an interview he did with Judith Miller, formerly one of the leading reporters for the New York Times, who told him on camera that she had been notified by somebody in the White House who had told her of a contact between a couple of Al-Qaeda operatives that they had picked up, they had monitored, and they were talking about a coming major attack that would force America to retaliate. They were very upset because they had done nothing after the coal. So they were anticipating initially an attack on July 4th of 2001. As we know, that did not occur then. It was to occur in September. So pick up the story there, Scott.
The coal, well, she turned out, she would have been investigating Al-Qaeda. She wasn't doing specific stories or reacting to specific Al-Qaeda attacks. In fact, she ran an entire series doing the whole background on Al-Qaeda, the only major news organization, or frankly, any news organization, done a major series on Al-Qaeda before 9-1-1. Those series ran in January 2001, for which she and her editor, Steve Engelberg, won a Pulitzer Prize.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back. All right, fine. So Scott has been telling us that Judith had actually received a Pulitzer Prize, along with her editor, for a series that she had done on Al-Qaeda. So she was quite aware of the fact that there was this terrorist organization out there. So pick up the story there. Anyway, she is notified by somebody. We don't know whether it was... We don't know whether she was notified before or after the 4th of July?
Sometime during that week, we're trying to find out precisely what she says in that interview. She said some other things. She came down from New York to sort of be close to those folks, and it meant her week, or her holiday week, would also, she would be working on standby because all these other people at the White House and in the counterterrorism world were on edge, as indeed I was. I lived at the time. Fort Myers had been high security. They were taking FBI people out of Yemen. That weekend was heightened security all over the world. She, however, had to work. Precisely which day, because it becomes important, because when she went back to New York, she told her editor, Steve Engelberg, about this, and he said, "That's a great, Judy. You got a good first paragraph and a good second paragraph. Where is the third? For instance, who is it that are speaking? What are their names? And where are they speaking?" She didn't know if it was a national phone call they intercepted, a local phone call. She didn't know what country. Anyway, her primary source, she went back and got a secondary source. She said, "Okay, well, you're right. I'll go back and see what I can find." She got a second source who could only confirm the initial information, but not any details. Her first source, the senior impeccable source, but her editor, Engelberg, was said to know by confirmed by both she and he, had gone out of town. So who and when that precise time was, I don't know yet, and I'm still working on it.
All right, fine. So Sidney Scott has written some articles, and they've appeared up on the Internet, about his interview with Sidney Judith Myers. So, Sidney, there's obviously there were people in the government who were anticipating a major attack, and, you know, at least some people thought it was going to be here because everybody was preparing it for him, the 4th of July. Now, why, after the 4th of July attack did not occur, why was it that they were not really staying on alert, you know, at the time of September? And why did the FBI and the CIA say, well, we thought the attack was going to be overseas, when, of course, on 4th of July, they thought it was going to be here? What made them change their mind, or is this simply some sort of a cover story they're putting out?
Well, I mean, to be fair, the CIA director, George Tenet, was, quote, running around D.C. with his hair on fire, as was Richard Clark, the counterterrorism guy in the National Security Council. They had some, in addition, FBI had some information that might be overseas. And to quote Judy, she said they uncorked the champagne at the White House after 4th of July passed and nothing happened. She herself got swamped. She and Engelberg had a book coming out about germ warfare, including anthrax, which was actually published on September 10th, 2001. And somehow, at least as far as the New York Times is concerned, it fell by the wayside when they couldn't get back to the primary source to get it confirmed until September 11th rolled around, and both Engelberg and Judith Miller actually witnessed the attacks in New York with their own eyes.
Well, it seems that there were so many people within government who knew an attack was coming, and yet, of course, nothing was done in any way to try to prevent that. In fact, you know, it's the most amazing thing, the way they had certainly the doors to the roof at the Twin Towers locked so nobody could get up there and get evacuated. How, you know, you would think that they would have had at least some sort of defense, maybe just one helicopter, their armed helicopter, to defend the Twin Towers when that was such an obvious, you know, target, because they'd already tried to take it down one time.
So that's quite true, and apparently not very much related people. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is alleged to have been the uncle of Ramzi Yousef, who was attacked in 1993.
Well,
to answer your question, hundreds of people, Doctor, hundreds in the United States government, various branches, and we were having turf wars between the FBI, the NSA, Special Operations Command, Delta Force, the Land Information Warfare Activity, INSCOM, which is Army Intelligence Security Command. I go on and on and on and on and give you name after name at the White House, at the National Security Council, the National Security Agency, at the Pentagon, at the Office of the Secretary of Defense. It goes on and on. Hundreds of people, some of whom tried diligently, and Central Intelligence Agency. I think I read you an email traveling between the CIA and FBI agents trying to get Moussaoui's laptop opened, and they couldn't in time, and it was dated 3:45 p.m. September 10th. And they failed. It was the last attempt to try to get... anyway, these are various individuals who tried, and there are hundreds more.
Well, I think the story of Zacharias Moussaoui is really so fascinating because apparently one of the FBI agents has testified that he was very concerned that Zacharias Moussaoui, who is, of course, what sometimes referred to as the 20th hijacker, I don't think he was, but I think he likes that title. Anyway, Zacharias Moussaoui certainly was training, on the 747, at least on a simulator, and the FBI up there recognized that what he was doing was training for an attack on one of our buildings. And so one of the FBI agents had put in something like 70 requests to his superiors, and they ignored every one of them. How could they ignore 70 requests?
FBI Special Agent Harry Sammet is the one who wrote those 70, not 20, 70 various attempts to get a FISA warrant, a Foreign Information Surveillance Act warrant from a special court to open his computer's laptop, which had information that might have helped stop 911. His superiors, a guy named Malby and another named Molenz, FBI supervisory special agents, testified in Moussaoui's trial, such as it was, that they ignored it. They didn't believe it.
But why would they ignore 70 requests? I can see ignoring one, but 70 requests? And then, why was nobody fired in the FBI for total incompetence?
That's another question that I'm still working on, I'm afraid. I'm working on that.
All right.
These stories of which Judy Miller is just the tip of the iceberg. So I'm actually following specific, formerly highly classified items around.
Well, of course.
This intercept. There were 33 intercepts from the National Security Agency. There were 70 memos from the FBI, et cetera. All of these have names attached to it, CIA, et cetera. So I'm just the articles you've seen, Doctor, are just the tip of the iceberg of a much bigger investigation, which is I'm still conducting.
Well, now, of course, I think that maybe we ought to talk a little bit about the Able Danger issue, because Able Danger was a name that was given by this military group that was actually, tracking terrorists, and they were simply going through a lot of intercepts, and they have this term that they use when they're going through a lot of computerized information. And, of course, they were well aware, Muhammad Atta and the three of his associates were probably terrorists, and yet somebody has destroyed all of that information. At least they claim they have. And then, of course, more recently, they've admitted that they actually have the information that lied, but we can't release the information on Able Danger because, of course, we still have an ongoing investigation.
Well, of course, they're still investigating why they didn't have any information, why they have so much information about that they don't have, and they're investigating. There actually is an Office of Inspector General, the Department of Defense investigation ongoing. There may even be some development, but...
Well, could you tell our listeners a little bit about Able Danger, what Able Danger is, and are you on a regular handheld telephone because it almost sounds like a speakerphone?
No, it's a cell phone. I'm traveling.
All right, fine. Well, please tell our listeners what Able Danger is, why it's so significant, and why this is being good.
Okay, well, there was Special Operations Command, SOCOM, under which people such as the famous Delta Force, Navy SEALs, etc., function. They had a special targeted, in this case, Army Intelligence had an outfit called Land Information Warfare Activity, which was highly secret. They started an off-the-shelf program, affectionately called Able Danger, all caps, it's sort of a code word, to data mine commercial databases and websites. And basically, take a picture of the Internet all over the world, and divine information from it. They were able to connect, find sort of five centers of gravity, one in Aden, Yemen, and they actually predicted and briefed the commander-in-chief of SOCOM about a possible attack in Al-Qaeda operations in Aden, and this information was never sent to the commander of that ship, USS Cole, that was subsequently attacked when it went in to refuel there. Despite that success, for various reasons, still not clear, some of which involve JAGS, the Joint Advocate Generals, the lawyers of SOCOM, concerned about turning over information about possible U.S. persons, this is in quotes, even though if they were here legally, even though it turns out some of them weren't, even foreigners visiting with green cards or proper visas. They're considered U.S. persons, and ergo they were very afraid of turning over this information to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who could have addressed the issue. In fact, the Able Danger team members tried to set up three meetings with FBI Washington field office, and they were stopped three times by the attorneys for the Special Operations Command. That was one stated reason. A second reason, one of the team members, a lady doctor, a double PhD, went to his Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and had told them that they had, in some of the other activities, they were monitoring Chinese proliferation of weapons and acquiring stuff. They had more than one program going under Able Danger, the rubric of. And in that case, several prominent Americans had come up into this commercial data mining operation, including then Provost of Stanford University, Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of Defense.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Scott Malone. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Scott Malone, and it's his organization, NavySeals.com, and he's telling us about the Able Danger investigation. And there were at least five military officers who came forward and destroyed their military careers, but they wanted to tell the American people the truth, and that is that they knew who Muhammad Atta was, and they were following him well over a year before 9/11, and it wasn't simply Muhammad Atta, it was several other the hijackers. And what's the most incredible thing is after they came forward, and Congressman Kurt Weldon tried to get the information out of the military, the Pentagon said that there wasn't any evidence, there was no information, they checked it out, it didn't exist, you can trust us, and then, well, then, of course, it turned out that they had the information, and they were lying about it, but they couldn't release it because of an ongoing investigation. Would you like to pick up on that story, Scott?
Sure, Doctor. Lying requires intent, and I don't necessarily know precisely yet in my investigation who's lying. They have piles of information. The original database is 2.5 terabytes, which is about 300,000 some odd books at least. Their initial database that they ran this special software on, they didn't exactly identify or were chasing Muhammad Atta. They identified four of the hijackers, Atta being one of them, his partner Al-Shahidi, Al-Midhar, and Al-Hazmi, come up in an NSA surveillance. At any rate, these came up as possibly linked to a, quote, Brooklyn cell, which is they're not physically in Brooklyn. This is just where the communications and connections all read and coughed up their names. They came up with hundreds of names. After 9/11, of course, everybody recognized this photograph. They also had photographs collected from websites and whatnot all over the world. And so you could chase people not just by their name, but by their photos. So all their names would come up. Atta didn't even use Atta very often. He used his middle name. So they didn't realize until after 9/11 that they had these guys. So to be fair to everybody on that regard. Now, they'd shut down Able Danger first in the spring of 2000, and then they took it and sort of did Able Danger number two down in Garland, Texas, much more highly classified. They started data matrixing, as they call it, raw NSA intercept data. So now you're getting to the good stuff. But once again, that was shut down. So it was only after the fact, right after 9/11, that these people approached Congressman Kurt Weldon, who was Vice Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, duly constituted and with appropriate clearances, to raise this issue. He took it over immediately to the White House, to the office of Scooter Libby, it turns out, and he turned it over to Stephen Hadley, who was then the Deputy National Security Advisor to the President. Scooter Libby was the National Security Advisor as well as Chief of Staff to the Vice President. He allegedly left this chart there. Stephen Hadley to this day has not disputed that fact. He just claims he can't remember the name Atta coming up in this briefing. This was September 28th, 2001. So Congressman Weldon then demanded the Pentagon produce stuff. This is when they started hemming and hawing, saying we don't have any. These guys were ordered to destroy all this database after we had the problems with it. It turns out the congressman in February had...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment, Scott. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Scott Malone. And, of course, I've been tracking some of these stories that suggest that there certainly was a great deal of advanced knowledge of the terrorist attacks coming on the United States, contrary to the protestations of people at the highest level of the Bush administration. And we've talked about Judith Miller, we've talked about the Able Danger issue, and of course the fact that they were monitoring by data mining and getting information. They certainly had pretty well zoomed in. There seemed to be four people people that they thought were terrorists, and Muhammad Atta being one of them. Anyway, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Thank goodness for Congressman Kurt Weldon, who certainly was aware of what was going on, tried to get the information on Project Able Danger from the Pentagon. And, of course, five military officers had come forward to verify the information. Pentagon said they didn't have any information. Later, they admitted they had the information, but they just couldn't let it out. So are we to believe that they were telling the truth before? Are they telling the truth now? Why would they not be forthright with telling the people the truth?
It's still under investigation, and I need to put names on it. In February of this year, the congressman finally got his one and only half-a-day hearing on this subject. Prior to that, he ran the name Muhammad Atta through the original pre-existing, pre-911 terabyte database, came up with Muhammad Atta's name 13 times. The Pentagon said, what? There are officials that were testifying. So apparently the database still exists. The Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence said he didn't know anything about it on February 15th of this year. Now, it's not to say they're all lying, but they can't seem to find, A, the destroyed database, and it turns out they sent us an FOIA, a response to a Freedom of Information Act request, saying that they had 9,500 pages of documents. They were relevant to our request, but they were still under investigation and possibly classified. They weren't going to release them.
And
that was in May 8th of this year.
Now, was that for you or was that for Congressman Weldon?
No, that was for NavySeals.com and the Public Education Center.
I see. So it appears that they're very much afraid to let this information out for fear that maybe it would fall into the hands of the wicked Osama bin Laden.
The documents, as pertain to this this investigation, as they become public or we make them public, are available on Able Danger blog. You can find on the internet the actual documents as well.
Well, because the thing is,
well, no, it's in conjunction with Congressman Weldon, but he is Congress, and we are just some news organizations.
Well, see, it seems that this administration seems to be so wedded to secrecy, they don't want any information out, and they're doing everything they can to block information getting to the public. And, you know, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it?
Well, for 30 years of chasing so-called secrets, as it were, frequently you fight very hard as an outsider, as a journalist, you get in, you find out that you get into the top secret box, you do a sword fight, and the people you work for are complaining, and you get in and you open it up and it's empty. That's the secret. Sometimes that's a legitimate secret that they don't know what the hell is going on. What's really the most stunning thing so far that I've learned is Judith Miller tells me straight to my face on camera she was given this information, top secret SCI, which is Special Compartment Information, code word information, an NSA intercept, because this senior person at the White House who gave her this information could not get the attention, well, not so much the attention, but the focus and emphasis for the president. He gave it to her on the theory, and this had happened to her before, she told me, because if they see it in the New York Times, they will focus on it. They would share the sense of panic from whoever this official was. And maybe something would have been done. Maybe 100 people would have got out of the Second World Trade Center. Maybe the people on the other flights would have reacted like they did on Flight 93. But she couldn't get that story without sufficient detail past her editor, and she agreed with that eventually. But the reason they were given that was to get the president to focus on it, and he didn't. And that's the most astonishing civics lesson I've ever heard in my life.
And, of course, if you read certainly Richard Clark's book, he tells you how he's repeatedly trying to get in to see the president, to have a conference with the president, to let the president know that he is very concerned about an attack coming on America, and he just can't seem to get to the president of the United States. It's almost as if somebody is intentionally blocking him and preventing the information about the coming attack from, of course, being publicly known. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Scott Malone. We'll invite your calls, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we've never got the whole or true story. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Scott Malone. Could you spell the Able Danger for our listeners so that they would know where that website would be? What is that specific website you mentioned?
It's the code word, Able, A-B-L-E. It's all one word. Able Danger, D-A-N-G-E-R, blog, B-L-O-G, .com. Able Danger blog publishes and posts documents as they become available, including all our documents that are public.
Oh, so you know who actually is Able Danger dot blog? Do we know who is putting the material up?
Mike Casper.
Okay, fine.
And there are several mediachannel.org, National Security News Service, whose website is long, complicated, storiesthatmatter.org, and which is part of the Public Education Center, and NavySeals.com. Together, we are jointly working together to get out as much information about pre-911 intelligence. At this stage, we're working on military intelligence, and that includes Special Operations Command, Able Danger Project, National Security Agency, which is under the Pentagon, and our next project will be the CIA and the Saudi Arabians, and our third project will be the FBI.
Well, I know one of the things that really always intrigues me is why did the President of the United States insist on censoring the initial Senate Intelligence Report, joint Senate-House Intelligence Committee report, and removed some 28 pages of information about the Saudi involvement in 911, and then insist on censoring the second report? How can we get the truth when it comes censored by the government to make sure that, you know, there was no government involvement? It seems to me like that's like the fox guarding the hen house.
Well, I would be inclined to agree, but that's merely my opinion. That investigation is still ongoing, and that's our second story. I'm focusing on the military at the moment. But as far as the president goes, you raise a question, and then you don't really ask it. Why were they leaking this to the New York Times to get the president to focus on Al-Qaeda possible attacks in the United States? You gonna ask the question?
All right, fine. I'll ask the question. Why?
As far as I can tell, and I'm not yet finished getting comments, the gatekeepers of the president, in particular one Karen Hughes, they were all brand new to the White House. Also, you asked an earlier question why they don't want all this stuff to come out. A, it's embarrassing about the Saudis, and two, it's embarrassing to the previous administration.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Scott Malone. I had simply asked him, you know, why it was that the Bush administration insisted on censoring these investigations that were supposed to tell the American people the truth about what really happened on 911. The first investigation was held in the year 2002. And it, of course, was the joint Senate-House Intelligence Committee report. The second one was, of course, the 911 Commission report. And the Bush administration insisted on censoring both of them. Now, if there was anything that, of course, was going to tell the truth about what happened, that was embarrassing to the administration, they would have censored it. Don't you think that the American people had the right to know what really happened and why 3,000 Americans died in the Twin Towers?
There were people from 90 countries, and not just Americans, but 3,000 more or less taxpayers died, and that is negligent homicide, in my opinion, of which there is no statute of limitations. It takes time. Several things. I can think of another example. They were investigating Chinese campaign contributions and espionage at a Republican Senate investigation, which exactly went nowhere because it was bipartisan. No campaign contributions.
You're talking about bipartisan treason. Both parties are taking money from the Chinese communists.
I didn't say treason. One of the secret military operations that followed up on this was called Able Danger, ironically. Right. It came up with more Democrats. Well, basically, as to the cover-up, it's from reading carefully the open-source record, you will see it was highly embarrassing to both administrations. The system was broken, and they didn't pay attention to it, this current administration.
But if you're
remember, they were brand new on the block back then.
Well, do they think if they're that incompetent, they'd be fired? And the question is, you know, here 3,000 people are dead. Not one person is censored or even criticized for what happened.
Or named.
And, of course, we see the FBI.
Or named. Just tell me their names. That would be approbation.
Well, I would say George Hennen would be the first one that I would have fired. He was in charge. And when you're in charge, why, you're responsible.
I agree.
And of course, the same thing with the acting head of the FBI. Of course, they'd gotten rid of the previous one, and they had an acting head of the FBI. And if he's that incompetent, he should have been fired. And nobody's fired 3,000 people then.
Well, there's two guys that are in charge of the counterterrorism apparatus that were holdovers from the Clinton administration. Three guys, sorry.
And of course,
Richard Clark, George Tenet, and Louis Free.
Right.
Now, Clark lied to me in 1990. He lied on camera and in the Washington Post article I wrote, the companion piece to Frontline. When he was Deputy Secretary of State for Political Military Affairs, he tried to tell me that Dr. Gerald Bull, who was assassinated in Brussels, was building a super cannon for Saddam Hussein. He tried to tell me that he was not an American. He was Canadian. I said, excuse me, here's a cable to your office that says his two U.S. passport numbers. Anyway, as far as I'm concerned, Richard Clark has been a liar since 1990.
Well, then why wasn't he fired if he was really a liar? I mean, the thing is that you
can't... If I was you, you'd have to ask the president. Those three people, well, Free has to stay on because of by statute. George Tenet was kept on because he named that new building after the president's father. I don't know why he kept those three people on. Those three people were in charge of terrorism.
Somebody is responsible, and nobody is held responsible.
So you have three names right there.
Oh, so anyway, we've got real problems. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. It's interesting. A recent survey suggested that some 70 million Americans think we need an independent investigation of what happened on 911. But I will tell you that it's going to be a long, long time before we ever get an independent investigation. The Bush administration tried to block the first investigation. That was the Joint Intelligence Committee. They tried to block the 911 Commission. When they could not do that, then they insisted on having their people put in charge of it. How can you have an independent investigation of what the administration knew or did not know when they're appointing the people who are going to do the investigation? That sounds like, once again, the proverbial fox there looking after the chickens.
The 911 Commission had five Democrats and five Republicans. It was bipartisan cover-up.
No question at all. I believe that that's absolutely true. But then I don't think that there's an awful lot of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. They're both supporting exactly the same globalist policies and the big spending. In fact, the Republicans have even become bigger spenders than the Democrats ever were.
Doctor, that's not my department. I'm an intellectual tree hugger. I'm down there. I don't see the forest. You do. I'm hugging the trees.
All right, fine. Well, tell us some more about the trees that you're looking.
The national security types did not get, and the counterterrorism people in particular, did not get the president's full focused attention on the subject to the extent that senior officials at the highest level had to leak classified information, apparently, to the New York Times. And they didn't succeed. And the rest is history.
All right, fine. Well, I think that there are a lot of unanswered questions, and I wonder if we will ever know the truth about what really happened that morning, why it was that on the very morning that the hijackers were going to, of course, hijack our planes and crash them into buildings, there was a simulated military exercise where hijackers were simulating, hijacking planes and going to crash them into I think, the CIA headquarters. It was sure convenient for those hijackers that it was that same morning. In fact, that's why so many of the air traffic controllers were confused, because they didn't know whether it was a real hijacking or whether it was part of that exercise.
I think, see, This involves human beings, fallible human beings, including myself, you, and Judith Miller, and everyone else, including the president. I think you'll find the most astonishing thing, which I'm not sure yet, but if someone were to look into it, there are individuals, for instance, who was doing Arabic transcription services for the National Security Agency in Laurel, Maryland, on September 10th. They were so busy they couldn't transcribe the zero-hour intercept.
Well, because, you know, that's the most amazing thing.
Doctor, there are names. This is not the Bush administration. This is not the Clinton administration. There are names. And that's where you will find the astonishing things when they found afterwards that why everybody's covering it up so much. That is my opinion.
I see. Well, of course, you know, so much of this is done by computer, and computers can translate from Arabic into English. I just don't know why they didn't bother to do that so they could really be monitoring. This seems to be they're either the most incompetent people in the world, or they're trying to convince us they're most incompetent people in the world. Because everything can be done by computer now. You don't have to have somebody sitting down with a little pad and paper writing that all out. Maybe they didn't know that. Maybe they're not as smart as I am.
Right, well, possibly not. And also, you're somewhat focused, as am I, and also the inflection of my voice, the cute American buzzwords I might use. I mean, it's just not that simple. A computer is not state-of-the-art yet. Now, outside of the fact that you and I are communicating over computerized generated circuits, do you rely on computers? I wouldn't rely on computers.
Well, I will tell you that as a physician, that they can actually take the most complicated medical dictation from the most erudite of the doctors, and that computer can write out the whole medical report, operative report, history, all of these things. So, but I guess maybe they haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Translate doctors' handwriting?
Yeah, no, they can translate doctors' dictation, oral dictation. But let's get back to some of the other things. Now, are you working on any other stories at the present time?
No, I've been working on this since 9/11. I saw the Pentagon go up in flames with my own eyes.
Are you working at this full-time? Are you working this full-time?
I'm working on it mostly full-time. I'm actually writing my memoirs, of which this is but the last chapter.
All right, now
I run NavySeals.com. I monitor stuff all over the world. I monitor everything.
All right, fine. Are you still working were you with PBS, or who were you with?
I was with PBS Frontline, the documentary series, for almost 20 years. 20 years.
Are you retired now, then?
I'm retired from that. I run NavySeals.com. I run their website, and I monitor intelligence, special operations, and counterterrorism things around the world. And I write articles as part of that, which is an investigation, which I'm going to do a much bigger article and eventually be a chapter in my book.
Oh, now, of course, are other people writing articles for NavySeals.com?
Oh, sure. Commander Mark Devine, who is the CEO of NavySeals.com and a reservist, helped put together, get the Marine Corps to join the Special Operations Command, because Marines always consider themselves, they're all Special Operators. We don't need to have a designation. Anyway, he marshaled that through. Thomas Smith Jr., who is an ex-military guy, writes about geopolitics, et cetera. We have lots of guest contributors. Peter Husey, who's a strategic missile expert, defense consultant. We have lots of people that write for us, obviously.
Well, now, whatever happened to the military officers, the five military officers who came forward and said, we were part of this Able Danger team, and we knew we were monitoring at least four of the hijackers before that. And of course, the government kept denying that this was true. What happened to their careers?
Monitoring is not the right phrase. They came up in these data mining up. United States Army Reserve is who you're speaking of. Captain Scott Philpott, United States Navy, he still is in there. They won't let him speak publicly. Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer lost his top secret clearances over going to Congress and welding about Able Danger. J.D. Smith is a civilian. He testified that he's lost two jobs over this, talking about Able Danger, duly constituted constitutional authority, being United States House of Representatives. In addition, Major Klein Smith is still in the United States Army. He testified he's the one who said he destroyed all the databases. He testified, and he's still in the United States Army. A few other people, more people have come forward that are not yet publicly identified. There's a fifth, and there's a lady, a civilian, Dr. Eileen Presser, who's the one who went to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, and she's going to be damned for doing that and damned for if she didn't do it. She has not publicly testified. Those would be the five, and not all military officers.
All right,
the other one is Commander Kirk Leopold, who is commander of the USS Cole, who was heroically saved that billion-dollar ship. He was commended, and then he wasn't, and he never received the proper intelligence from either NSA, Defense Intelligence Agency, or the Able Danger people at SOCOM. That never got to him, and his promotion has been held up to this day.
And it seems to me like the people who have come forward and told the truth about Able Danger, have been punished for telling the truth. Why would they punish people for telling the truth?
I don't know. You'll have to ask them. The commander-in-chief of SOCOM, Special Operations Command, is called SINCSOC, at the time, who was briefed 2 weeks before the Cole attack in Hayden by the Able Danger team, retired in October 2000. He was called out of retirement. He's now Chief of Staff of the United States Army. His name is Pete Schumacher. He was also, back in the day, commander of Delta back during the Waco siege in 93. The commander-in-chief of CENTCOM, Central Command, at the time was newly appointed. His name was Tommy Franks. He led combat operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. Both Pete Schumacher personally and possibly at least his senior people were advised, Tommy Franks, and nothing's happened to them, nor they ever said what they did with this information.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Bill calling from Florida. Bill, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I wanted to ask your guest what his thoughts were on whether it was an actual plane or a Predator that hit the Pentagon, and about the demolition, from what I see of the pictures of the Trade Center towers.
All right, fine. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
That would be Building 6 and 7, possibly. No, I don't.
All right.
I do have one on the Pentagon since I lived there. I sold my house. I did not mention to the realtor I saw the Pentagon go up in flames. I lived right behind Fort Myer. And I heard the plane fly down Columbia Pike. Air traffic around Washington is a real sensitive subject. And 757s don't frequently fly down Columbia Pike without major objections from all the neighbors. So that's my opinion. I heard the airplane hit, and I saw the result.
All right, fine. Thanks very much. Anything else, Bill?
That's it. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too. And of course, that was Bill calling from Florida. And if you just got time for one more call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, Scott, let's get your website out so people would know how to get out to DavySeals.com and what they will find there if they go to that website.
Well, you'll find updated articles on special operations, counterterrorism, and intelligence operations. You'll find several articles about Able Danger, about the Judith Miller interview and its ramifications. Our sister websites in this endeavor are storiesthatmatter.org, O-R-G, excuse me, mediachannel.org, and abledangerblog.com, where we post our documents. Those are the websites that keep you as pretty much abreast of things as we are.
All right, fine. I think that, of course, there's a great deal of excellent material out there on the Internet, but people have to be very, very discerning and watching very, very carefully as they read it and interpret it, because I think it's so vitally important. We need alternatives to the controlled medium, and I believe the media is controlled. We just have to be sure we're getting the truth. Well, do you have a parting thought for our listeners today as far as your work is and where you hope to go from here?
Well, we have to publish a major magazine article of some sort, pulling all these things together that you and I, Doctor, have been speaking about several times, pulling it all together. You'll see it in bits and pieces as we go along. That should come fairly soon. That would be, like I said, pre-9-1 military intelligence. We're going to address the Civilian Intelligence Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation and subsequent investigations. Yeah, you have to be careful. Take everything with a grain of salt. At abledanger.blog and NavySeals.com, you can see the document. So you can make up your own minds. Your listeners can make up their own minds. And final thought would be, managing editor, now the executive editor of the New York Times, to this day, has not addressed what Judy Miller did in the story she didn't do.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate so much you being with us, Scott. We'll be talking to you on Monday evening on our evening program. And until then, you know, may the Lord be with you.
May the Lord be with you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, there's Dr. Stan here, and there's so much confusion about what happened that day. But there are certain things we can be certain of, and that is that Building 7 did not come down because there was a fire in this steel-reinforced building. The entire base of the building collapsed, and obviously there were explosives there. I do not believe that Osama bin Laden snuck explosives into the base of Building Number 7, because that's where the FBI and the CIA worked. And then, of course, the story of the two magic passports. I mean, very few things, you know, escape from the flaming inferno of the North Tower or from the flaming inferno of Flight 93. But two passports that belonged to two of the hijackers, this was either the most miraculous thing or those passports were planted to give us the idea that those hijackers were on the plane. Those are the only two alternatives. And if they were planted, somebody knew ahead of time and planted those passports. You're going to have to decide. Sort of like the magic bullet that went through President Kennedy and went through Governor Conley and went through Governor Conley's right wrist and left all sorts of lead bullet fragments, and then through Governor Conley's left leg and left all sorts of bullet fragments, and then magically reconstituted itself to pristine condition. It was found lying on the gurney in Parkland Hospital there, the same gurney that Governor Conley was lying on. If you believe that story, you probably will believe what the government has told you about what happened on 9/11. But we do know certain things. We do know that they had advanced knowledge there was going to be an attack on the Pentagon. How do we know that? Why, because Bill Gertz had written an article, and we have a copy of it. We got it off the Internet on September 11th. It was a Bill Gertz highlighter. It was published, I think, on the Northwest Stewardess's website, and talked about something called Project Pajinka. And this was in June and July, where they were going to hijack planes and crash them into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and the White House and the Sears building in Chicago and the Transamerica building in San Francisco. The most amazing thing is, when I asked Bill Gertz about the articles we had the copy of, he didn't even remember writing the article. We do know that the president was notified, you know, in August 6th that there was a plan that bin Laden was determined to attack America. And there were two references to hijacking, and they said that there were over 70 cells or al-Qaeda units that were being monitored at that time. And yet the FBI said that, gee, we couldn't infiltrate any of them. We didn't even know who any of these al-Qaeda units were in the United States. And yet the day after the attack, why, they arrested over 1,000 Muslims and took them to prison. Lots of things just don't quite make sense about what we've been told. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and for those of you who would really like to know what happened on September 11th, we have some great books. One of them is called The Terror Timeline. It's written by a gentleman, Paul Thompson. And, of course, we actually have my interviews with Paul Thompson. You'll certainly want to get that 911 update. My interviews with Paul Thompson and Jimmy Walters and others. You need to understand that there was advanced knowledge. One of the hijackers had even defected and gone into the FBI office in Newark, New Jersey in April of 2000 and said he was part of a team of hijackers. And the most amazing thing is the FBI didn't even try to find out who the other hijackers were. They didn't even ask where he'd been trained. He told them he was trained in Pakistan. They never once asked him where the training camp was, almost as if they knew it all ahead of time. And they just shuffled him right out of the country. And if these people are incompetent, why weren't they fired? And if they didn't know ahead of time and didn't try to stop the attack, then they're guilty of murder. And of course, people, you know, certainly would be afraid to come forward. Could you imagine what would happen to somebody who came forward and told the truth about what happened on 9/11 and the response of the American people? We do know that, of course, that Mayor Willie Brown was notified the night before the attack. We know that the people in the Pentagon canceled their flights for the 11th of September or the 10th of September. We do know that the children in the Pakistani portion of New York actually brought their cameras to school on the day of 9/11 so they take pictures of the attack. But our incompetent FBI wasn't as smart as those children from the Pakistani section of New York, because they thought the attack was going to be somewhere in Europe that day. Well, our telephone, if you'd like to get the information, terror timeline, War on Freedom, Inside Job. Those three books, very important, to give you the background so you can talk about this intelligently, and you can get the documentation for everything. And that is the War on Freedom, Terror Timeline, and Inside Job by Jim Mars. We recommend all of those to you. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I want to mention, of course, that I will be speaking this weekend. And if you're going to come, you're going to have to get there early, because I'm the first speaker in the morning at 8:30 in the morning at the Hyatt Regency over in Santa Clara. And if you want any information, that's 209-832-0999. We're going to be there all weekend at the Conspiracy Conference. There are going to be some great speakers there. Some people I may disagree with, but some people I really disagree with. And of course, Jim Mars is going to be there, and Ted Gunderson and Will Thomas, and a lot of people we've had as guests on our program through the years. So if you can make it, again, the number to call is 209-832-0999. That's the Hyatt Regency over in Santa Clara. And so then, Chris, we need to remind you, Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we could really use your help. Right now, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders, our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Our website, radioliberty.com. And so, until Monday, may the Lord be with you.